When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jones, Bowden, he's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
So it's about 4:35 p.m. in Rawalpindi in Pakistan. The light is fading. Pakistan are 9 wickets down. Victory for them is out of the question. And Jack Leach pins Nasim Shah, LBW, given out by Joel Wilson, of course, reviewed. And Moraes Erasmus, the third umpire, upholds that LBW verdict from Joel Wilson. And to me, Simon, that is one of England's greatest ever test victories, at home or away, almost certainly away from home. The way they conjured victory from that comatose pitch with such a young and relatively inexperienced team was absolutely remarkable. What was it like to be at?
It was really tense. I mean, you could see the light obviously closing in. You know, the floodlights were on. England struggled for half an hour or so. You thought, is it going to slip away from them? There was that moment when there was that edge between Ollie Pope and Joe Root at first slip that went away for four, and you thought, is that the moment for England? You saw the anguish on Ben Stokes' face, and you thought, yeah, they could hold on. You know, fair play to the Pakistan's last wicket, a partnership of Shah and Muhammad Ali. You know, they dug in, and it was a flat pitch, but they showed the mettle that they needed to show, and then Leach just slid one on LBW. Tense, yeah, exciting. And I agree with you, ultimately, one of England's greatest victories overseas. I mean, it's hard to quantify, isn't it? You say anywhere, and I mean, there have been some great wins over the years, and perhaps we could explore that in a moment. But I don't think many people thought that an England win here in this test match was that likely, despite the fact they scored so quickly. Pakistan made 579 in their first innings, and you know, to delay the match. And you thought, can they get 20 wickets on that service? They could, just in time, Yoz.
Mm. Yeah, if you look at the victories over the years, obviously the first one that springs to mind, home or away, was the Ben Stokes inspired victory over Australia at Headingley, one by one wicket. Of course, we hear your commentary to commemorate that moment at the start of this podcast. But that was a victory which was, I suppose, a sort of Houdini act in a way. England came back from the dead. They were bowled out for 60-odd in the first innings and somehow managed to conjure victory there. But here, this victory, and obviously there are others we can talk about, but this victory was sort of instigated from the start by that amazing, enterprising approach by England's batsmen to get that 500 in a day, a record-breaking amount of runs in the first ever test match. And from then on, they've always tried to make the running and tried to forget about the likelihood of defeat or draw and just projected for a win from the start in very adverse conditions for bowlers anyway, for certainly English-type bowlers. And they've pulled it off. Stokes as an inspired captain, the team lining up behind him in a most incredibly sort of stoic and stamina-led way. I mean, the resilience that they showed with the ball over the last day and a half was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, all right, so Ollie Robinson, interestingly, was man of the match for his 5 wickets and 4 wickets in the second innings. And he's raised his game to another level, which sometimes these sorts of conditions enable you to do. But they're all unsung heroes as well, like, for instance, Ollie Pope, that brilliant down the leg side catch, one-handed catch, kind of shoved in as wicketkeeper, as makeshift wicketkeeper, right at the start of the game when Ben Folkes was unavailable for illness. And he's all right, so he hasn't taken every single chance, there's one that escaped him, but when they needed it, he took it. And I think there's just so many examples of players that have had an outstanding test and, you know, been inspired by an outstanding leader.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. A fantastic victory for England. Three things were against them, it seems to me. I remember the start of the Test match, you know, some of them were ill. I mean, Ben Folkes missed the game, so they had that to deal with. You know, a few of them were in bed on the day before. Ben Duckett, you know, you said he was on the toilet at 5 o'clock in the morning, but, you know, before he was opening his innings, and then went out and made 100. The pitch, as flat as I can ever remember, you know, it was just so little there for the bowlers. So that was against England. And the other thing that was against England was the time. You know, this was a shorter Test match. We worked out that basically it was a Test match that lasted 4 days and one session. So they won on a flat pitch in 4 days and a session, which really takes some doing against, you know, Pakistan's side. It's not the greatest Pakistan side, let's be fair. It's not, you know, it doesn't have a great lower order, but there's some decent players in that top order, and, you know, three of them got hundreds, didn't they, in the first innings, and the others showed some real adhesion and promise. I thought Saud Shakeel, you know, today, really gritty innings from him, and Salman Aga as well in this Test match shaped well. So, you know, it wasn't easy for England to prize out that's what it was about, wasn't it? It was prizing out the first six wickets. Once they got six into that lower order, that fragile lower order, then they felt they had a chance. And it was a question of how quickly they could do it, and they just about did it quickly enough. What did you think at tee, Oz? It was 257 for five, and Azhar Ali and Salman had dug in, actually. They played pretty well in that partnership. I mean, it felt to me at tee as though Pakistan were favourites. 86 to win. Okay, there was going to be a race against time, but they just got, after tee, it was just sort of so constipated. They couldn't get away, and then they lost the wicket. But at tee, did you think Pakistan were just about favourites?
I did, actually. I thought they were just about favourites, but partly because if you look at the previous two sessions, there had been about 80 runs scored in each of them. Mm. And so if with 80-odd to win in the final session, that was fairly similar to their scoring rate over the previous two sessions. So with those two in looking pretty secure, and England just tiring a touch and there being nothing in the pitch for the bowlers, I did fancy Pakistan just slightly, but I thought it would only take one wicket to change that, because from eight onwards, the Pakistan batting order is not good. And Nazim Shah is definitely not a number eight in Test cricket. He averages only five with the bat at this level. And I thought that the thing is, the difference of the momentum shift, it can be incurred by just one wicket. And then suddenly the bowlers are all invigorated by the knowledge that there are four fairly ordinary batsmen left, and they can almost get rid of the other batsman who's any good by just getting him off strike and then just focusing on those tail enders. So it was a very finely balanced at tee, and I thought that was the beauty of the whole situation. The fact that they declared England yesterday with that tantalising target of 342 in the distance, but the fact that they needed that extra time also to be able to get those wickets, and so it proved. I thought they would struggle to get the five wickets in the last session, actually. I thought even if they get two straight after tee, it's a pitch on which you can block and survive even lower order players. And I thought it was going to be really touch and go whether England managed to get there. But actually, to the credit of the bowlers, they generated enough chances. A couple of them were not accepted, but they generated probably seven chances and got the five wickets they needed.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that happened today is the ball started to do something, didn't it? And it didn't do it in Pakistan's first innings. When England was striving away, they're out there for 150-plus overs. It didn't happen in that Pakistan first innings. I mean, that was such a tough effort to bowl Pakistan out. So why did the ball start to just do a little bit today? It reversed a bit. The ball was changed. Ollie Robinson made that point to me post-match in his interview, saying the ball was changed, different ball. The surface, is it just a bit more scuffed up after 5 days?
I think that's the main thing. I think what happens in Test cricket, even on a flat pitch like this, is over the 4 days, it does dust up a bit more. It's a bit drier every day. The batsmen running up and down on it, plus the bowlers bowling over and over on it. It just gradually disintegrates. And even though it held together and didn't help the bowlers from a movement off the pitch point of view, or bounce, uneven bounce, it just, because it's drier and drier each day, it just abrades the ball, scuffs the ball a little bit more each time. Also, I think England realised that one of the ways of getting the ball scuffed up is to go with the bouncer ploy. And they did that early on in this Pakistan second innings. In fact, Stokes and Robinson took the new ball and bowled short virtually exclusively for about the first, I don't know, 7-8 overs. And that's also a good way of getting the ball scuffed up and just getting those little indentations, which gradually over time wear and widen, and eventually you get that reverse swing.
Just going back to great England victories, I mean, it's hard to quantify, isn't it? I mean, how you do it. But I mean, I think back to some victories in India. There's the amazing Kevin Peterson, Alistair Cook test match in Mumbai when Peterson played like a god, really. One of the great innings from an England player. And they beat India in Mumbai in that outstanding series victory they had back in, what was it, 2011, 12, something like that. And then, of course, they won in Calcutta as well. There was the victory in Chennai on the last tour when they won the first test match and Joe Root made a double hundred. I mean, that was a significant victory for England. There'd be, you know, you think of wins in Australia.
Yeah, I could think, I mean, 2010, the win in Melbourne, I thought was an absolutely amazing victory. They'd lost the third test in Perth, so it was 1-1. And Boxing Day, the MCG, the cauldron of Australian cricket, 90,000 Aussies there waiting to see English blood or English bodies roasted on the barbecue. And England won the toss, bowled Australia out for 98, were 150 for naught at the end of the day. And they won that test match and won the Ashes. So that was an amazing game. So that was undoubtedly one of England's greatest wins overseas. I don't know. I just this one, because of the way they did it, because of the way England backed themselves right from the start to set a new benchmark for how to bat in Test cricket, and the ambition that they had, right, we're going to show you how to play Test cricket in Pakistan and we're going to win. And it took them to the bitter end of the last session to get there with every, you know, sinew and muscle expended in all its energy, but
and brain cell and brain cell,
yeah,
because
that's actually a good point, because, you know, I was fascinated by that last session with the permutations of the bowling. Did they take the second new ball? If they did, who were they going to give it to? The delay in taking it was perfectly timed because it was still getting quite a bit of movement with the old ball. And probably the new ball wouldn't move very much. But at the same time, the new ball might bounce a bit more. So it was a really precarious decision to have to make. They stuck with the old ball and then, you know, got the new ball just in the nick of time to finish Pakistan off. Brilliant.
Yeah, all about degree of difficulty, I think, in terms of sort of placing this England victory. I mean, there were some great wins in India under David Gower, that tour where they won over there, and Gatt and Graham Fowler made runs. There was a win in the West Indies, first match of the 1990 series, when West Indies were, you know, invincible at home, and England won that test match by 9 wickets. I mean, there have been examples, and, you know, you can go back in the day, there have been some great away.
Well, of course, there was a one in Karachi in 2000 as well, which was achieved. Even Michael Atherton was on Sky after the game tonight and said it was even darker in Karachi for that victory than it was when Sky were broadcasting their post-match, post-mortem, half an hour at the end of play today. So it must have been an amazing match to be part of. But I don't know. I just think this from start to finish has been remarkable.
Yeah, because you're right, because they had to take the ball and run with it right from the start of the match. You know, because of the limited amount of time and because of the difficulty of the pitch and the quality, you know, the you know, decent quality of Pakistan's top seven. It was not easy to dislodge them. What about, the decision to give the player of the match to Ollie Robinson, even, I think, it took him by surprise. I mean, Harry Brook won't mind, I don't think, but this is a player who scored 240 runs in the game off 181 balls. And, you know, without Brook, without that way of playing, England wouldn't have been able to set up what they were able to achieve. So it's an all-round team performance, and you almost feel that it should be players of the match because everyone probably just about contributed over the course of the 5 days. Liam Livingstone was probably the only one who, you know, who, originally selected who missed out because of injury, and obviously he's on his way home, which is a huge disappointment for him. So there'll be, you know, great celebration in that England dressing room this evening, but tremendous disappointment for Liam Livingstone. It's funny, isn't it, how that can do a team game, but with individuals within it can have that sense of personal disappointment and tough for him. But yeah, it really was an all-round team performance. But, you know, Harry Brook, he is such a young star in the making, and we were talking about this last night, how do they fit Pesto back in the side when he's fit again. But I think it was quite a creative call to signal out Ollie Robinson, actually, because when the pitch is that flat, you bowlers who come up with something different are able to prize batters out. You want to reward that, and that's not to say that, you know, you'd expect Harry Brook to score loads of runs because it was nice and flat. But bowlers, it really shows bowlers being rewarded. And I think, you know, sometimes on a bowler's pitch, a batter who makes 70, you know, that encapsulates the game, doesn't it? Well, that helps you win the game.
No, I think you've summed that up very well. Fact is, Robinson took 25% of the Pakistan wickets, 5 in the match, and it was a totally batsman-friendly pitch. And he found ways of taking wickets. I think it was actually his ability also to adapt his game. So he started out the game by bowling fairly conventional, attempting to move the ball around off the seam and get a bit of extra bounce. At times in the second innings, he was prepared to go with the bouncer tactics, which is something he hadn't tried before. Opened the bowling, bowled a lot of short balls, and there were some pretty good ones in there. And then towards the end of today's play, he really came into his own, reverse swinging the ball both ways and trying to get that, you know, late in swinging Yorker and pinning the batsman on the crease. Also, that inspired bit of tactics to get Azhar Ali out by having a leg slip and Robinson bowling straight, angling it down the leg side and getting him caught by Joe Root at leg slip. That was a brilliant bit of tactical awareness, both by captain and bowler. You could say it was lucky, but it's no more lucky than getting an edge to slip in a way. He was bowling for that wicket and the ball was, you know, obediently hit into the hands of Joe Root. So I think for adaptability and stamina and sort of tirelessness, Robinson, yeah, deserves it. Brook is a fantastic player. To me, he's got a sort of combination of Kevin Peterson's audacity, Michael Vaughan's style, and Joe Root's immaculate ability to score runs or understanding of how to build an innings. So what a combination. And just took it by storm in this game. 240 runs from, what is it, 160 balls. Amazing performance.
181 balls, yeah.
Amazing performance, but the conditions were in his favour.
Yeah, and a bigger test will come against different types of attack. I mean, the amazing thing now, Yoz, of course, this game has gone right the distance, you know, 10 minutes before bad light would have probably stop play, and they've got to turn it all round, head off to Multan and do it all again. How tough is that physically? I mean, I suppose the question might be, do England just have to rotate a little bit, some of their pace bowlers? I mean, Jimmy Anderson again, I mean, those figures of his, we haven't even talked about Jimmy yet, 24 overs, 12 maidens, 4 for 36 in the second innings. He was miserly in the first innings as well, so he took 5 wickets in the match. He took some lower order wickets, like two quick ones actually, to really hasten England towards victory, with Mahmood, a brilliant catch by Pope down the leg side, and then Harris Rauf, LBW for naught, and he got rid of Rizwan as well. And Rizwan actually could have, he was the real potential thorn for England today, because he can score quickly and he was starting to take control of the game, and Anderson got him out just after lunch. So he just continues to perform. It's as simple as that.
He continues to confound his age. You know, 40 years old, as you say, 22 overs in the second innings, 4 for 36, absolutely fantastic. It's taken him to and the astonishing tally of 672 Test match wickets. So he's now only 36 behind Shane Warne. And it's just interesting to see, actually, what he's doing kind of average-wise overseas. People have said, oh, you know, not as effective overseas as he is at home. Well, in Asia now, he's taken 79 wickets at 27, which is not much higher than his overall average. At home, he's taken 429 wickets at 23. And okay, away from home, he's taken 221 at 31. So a little bit higher, certainly, but an incredible performer. And you just think he was the only survivor of that series against Pakistan in Pakistan in 2005. And he's still going now. It's just remarkable to watch. Still wanting to learn new skills, still happy to charge in and find a way of taking a wicket. His insatiability is similar to, you know, a Jeff Boycott or a Joe Root with a bat. It is. You don't very often find insatiable fast bowlers because fast bowling is such hard work. And every time I see him run up to bowl, I can sort of feel my knees and my hips creaking. And he just makes light of it all. It's amazing.
You talk about hard work. England in the field for 250 plus overs. Pakistan in the field for 137 overs. There's a lot of hard work that's gone into this victory. It's only 3 days until the next Test match. So, what do England do? Do they think about rotating, mixing and matching a bit? And they have got Mark Wood to come back in the side. Craig Overton is waiting in the wings as well. Is it because of the circumstances, age a little bit? That do you think you rotate a bit, or do you just go, oh, well, this worked, folks back for Livingston, same again, off you go?
I think you do rotate, actually, because I don't think bowlers will agree. They'll say, look, I'm fine to go. Anderson will be fine. He'll turn up on Friday. Yes, I want to play. But it does chip away at your stamina, undoubtedly, that kind of amount of overs. And, of course, don't forget, England, because of the way they bat, they don't give their bowlers much time off either. They go out there and whack it for a day, and then the bowlers have got to go out there and do it again. So it's hard for this England bowling attack to keep going, given the way England bat and the knowledge that you are going to have to spend a lot of time in the field. And you don't realise how much your body is tired while the adrenaline keeps you going. But I think, actually, sensibly, it would be better to sort of bring in Wood and maybe Overton for this next Test match. I think England do really need another seamer. I mean, Ben Stokes, how does he keep going with that knee falling apart? But he does. But I still think it would be better to have him as the fourth seamer, really, and have three out-and-out specialist fast bowlers. So for the next Test, I would be thinking Wood, Overton and Robinson, and give Jimmy a break and bring him back for the third Test. I think they have to think about an extra seamer because the spinners are just ineffective. I know that Will Jacks took a sixer in the first innings, but you know, there was a sort of element of beginner's luck about that, and you know, a few people caught in the deep and things. So, you know, he doesn't look to me like a spinner yet who's going to bowl a team out with, you know, vicious spin and brilliant control. He will improve, and I think he's got a lot of potential. But for the moment, and also given the fact that reverse swing is almost more potent in this part of the world than spin, I would just be looking at an extra seamer for the next Test.
So Will Jacks was six on his debut, in your book, might have to make way because of the fact that, yeah, England...
Well, of course, Livingston's out, isn't he?
Yeah, but
now,
Folks is going to come back, isn't he, into the side. So there's one change. And then, you know, another bowler, another pace bowler in for a spinner. That was, you know, that would cut England down to Root and Leach to bowl spin, and then actually four pace bowlers, including Stokes. So that's perhaps the decision.
Yeah, it's quite hard to fit them all in, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's not easy. It's the old, you know...
Well, maybe, okay, so maybe Overton and Wood play the next Test. And Jimmy and Robinson sit it out and play the final Test, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they could do. As for Pakistan, I thought their bowling in this match, I mean, it looked a bit average, to be honest, but it was a difficult pitch to bowl on. Harris Rauf, of course, is injured, so he'll be out. And they've got some options. Mohammad Wasim Jr., who played in the T20 World Cup final, he's uncapped. You know, he's an option for them. They could play Fahim Ashraf, who's an all-rounder. And that might work for them because he's accurate. might give them some control, and he can bat as well. So that might be an option for Pakistan. And they've also got the option of Abrar Ahmed, who's the young leg spinner who has done really well in the domestic competition leading up to this test match, and then didn't get a game, and they played Zahid Mahmood instead. So that there are options, and they also got another spinner as well, Noman Ali, left armer, who's not too bad a batter as well. So they might be able to strengthen lower down. I think probably the batting is fine for Pakistan. I mean, goodness me, they made 579 in this test match. That's the third highest score to lose a test match in history. I mean, so that, you know, they contributed to this game in their way, Pakistan. Just that England just took the game to another level. So just generally, Pakistan, you think they need to change their bowling?
If anyone in Pakistan is willing to come in and bowl against this cavalry charge of the England batting, they do need a bit more. And I can see that mystery spinner being a valuable asset. So I would certainly look to play him. I didn't think that the leg spinner, Mahmood, was that effective. I know he was sort of on his debut as well, but I don't know. I think they need something else with the ball to stem the inevitable tide of English run making. I'd also like to just say, quite apart from the Pakistani players contributing to this game, what about the crowd as well? Yeah. Five days of excellent crowd, and they all came piling in today to see perhaps a Pakistan victory. They were gripped and wrapped by every ball. I got stories from our World Best Cricket Club members who were at the game saying that Pakistani fans came up to them afterwards and said well played to the England fans. So they were very sporting in defeat, and they just add so much colour and vibrancy to a test match. It's wonderful to see a test match being so well attended away from England or Australia.
Yeah, all 5 days as well. I mean, I think today was the biggest crowd. You're right. As people sensed, the word got around, this could be a really gripping finale. And ultimately, they're very disappointing. But of course, they were also backing that last wicket pair as well. You know, they were cheering and supporting them, and they sort of sensed they might get away with the draws. So they were right involved in that. So it was gripping for them right to the end as well. So there was a lot for them to support. Yeah, it's fantastic to see the size of crowd there for 5 days. Was it because England play exciting, aggressive cricket, or was it because they've been starved of cricket?
Undoubtedly, it's partly due to the way England play, but also, you know, the fact they haven't had much test cricket for so long. And it's just great. I mean, people must have had to give up work today or take a sickie or something to get there, because it's a working day Monday in Rawalpindi, obviously. But just fantastic to see. And in a way, you know, it's a shame, isn't it, that the Football World Cup is so dominant at the moment, because if people weren't so addicted to it in a way, then I think this match would get even more coverage than it is getting, because it's an absolutely brilliant advert for Test match cricket. But unfortunately, people just haven't got the time to watch Test match cricket. So we almost need a way of somehow compressing this excitement into a shorter form, it just to see a review of it, if it is what I mean. The joy of winning a test match in this sort of circumstance must eclipse the joy of winning even a World T20 final, really, because of the effort and commitment that you put in for those 5 days.
Yeah, I sort of know where you're going with this. I suppose that the thing is, you could never take a T20 World Cup final away from anyone. It's there forever, isn't it? You know, we won it in 2022 with all the players who were there. The other thing as well, I said to Ben Stokes at the end, you've actually won some incredible test matches this year. You know, how does this one rank? And he actually said this one ranks highest. But there have been so many of these performances by England this year. The amazing victory at Trent Bridge, the incredible victory against India at Edgbaston, that record chase, and also beating South Africa at the Oval as well was something special inside of two and a bit days. You know, the game was reduced to 3 days because of rain and the Queen dying, and England knock them over in just about two and a bit days. I mean, there have been some some of the, back to back, some of the most incredible test matches England have ever played. They've sort of condensed them into this year. So I mean, so although Multan is only 3 days away, and I said to Ben Stokes afterwards, you know, you've got to do it all again in 3 days. And he looked at me, he said, have we? You know, he's always a bit surprised that the next game was coming around so quickly. I don't think he looks that far ahead necessarily. Although it is, you know, we're sort of looking forward to it already. The road to Multan tomorrow, we're driving down there. We're a sort of bus convoy, leaving, I don't know, about 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, hoping to get there before dark. And looking for more of the same. I wonder what sort of pitch Pakistan will come up with for the next game. Because if they play on a flat pitch, really, you know, similar to this, it perhaps it does play into England's hands again. I don't know. They can, you know, they can just smash it again. Whereas if there's a pitch that, you know, I don't know, a slow turner or even a Bunsen burner, then it might be a bit harder to play in that ultra aggressive way. What do you think?
Well, I think it's just a pitch like this doesn't really deserve such an exciting test match, actually. And, you know, it's supposed to be, test cricket is supposed to be a contest between bat and ball. This was bat totally dominating ball until really the last probably session, in fact. And I just, that isn't good for cricket. So hats off to both teams for making such a brilliant spectacle out of a totally deceased pitch. One hopes the groundsman would have a bit more imagination and produce something which has a little bit more of a balance for the next two games. But anyway, you know, just to say again, really, I mean, well done to both teams for the fantastic entertainment that they've put on over the last 5 days. And England, despite the England football team scoring countless goals in the World Cup and beating Senegal last night, I think the England cricket team have upstaged them.
Well, yeah, a tremendous victory. Just a footnote on the groundsman, actually. I think Atif, who was part of our team, spoke to him either this morning or yesterday morning, and the groundsman said, well, they're criticising my pitch, but, you know, look at the game it's produced. I think this game might actually encourage him to produce another pitch like this because of the fantastic cricket. But I think I think he has to understand there are special circumstances that pertain to this match that allowed us to get a result. I mean, without the way that England progressed the game and the positivity with which they played and the declaration as well, which I have to say I was a bit skeptical about. I always like 20 or 30 more runs. Would England declare in the first test of the Ashes next summer 343 with four sessions with the Australians?
Listen, I why not? And Ben Stokes will just be invigorated by what's happened in this game. And isn't it a fact that in the history of Test cricket, so that's I think in excess of 2,000 matches, only 13 times has a captain declared on his third innings, on the team's third innings, and lost the match, which really tells you that most captains are very conservative and won't take the risk. And the risk here produced the most wonderful reward. And there would have been no shame if England had lost, if Pakistan had won. The Pakistanis would have deserved to win. And I don't think that England could have blamed themselves at all. They tried their best to win, and often you do have to risk losing to win. And it's important for the future of Test cricket that teams do take a risk here and there, because it makes the overall event that much more compelling.
Well, this England team this year are confounding us all. I mean, they felt in their doldrums, didn't they? After that West Indies series, they lost in the West Indies, thought, where on earth are England going to turn to next? Who are they going to turn to? They turned to Stokes and McCullum, and it's fair to say that it's been quite interesting so far. So we're on to Multan. We're hoping for more. We can't possibly get a test match as good as the one we've just had, but, you know, it's going to be worth watching whatever these two teams come up with, and we'll be back after the first day's play to review it and give our thoughts. Hope you've enjoyed this test match. It's been a fantastic to be here in Pakistan. What a great way to start the series. So goodbye for now, and speak to you later in the week. Sports Social.
Social Podcast Network.